Shocker, how are you doing?
Doing well, buddy. How are you today?
Oh, outstanding. Well,
unreal weather, hey?
Oh, it's great weather, yes. I am amazed by how many people think getting rid of Jeff Petrie is fine because you'll replace Johnny Boychuk, and that's an upgrade, which is great if you do it, but unfortunately that doesn't help your depth at all.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, I don't know. I think that we've talked about Petrie so much, and Petrie, I agree with the idea of not keeping Petrie on a free agent overpay. So if Jeff Petrie were going to stay here on a deal that were reasonable money, then it makes sense for the player that he is. The time to make that decision was a year ago, like you've said. So whether it's a miscalculation, whether it's Petrie's hit a level that he hadn't hit before, and that's Craig McTavish's job to understand that he has that potential and get a deal done, whether he ever would have hit it with a new contract or not. It's all kind of, I don't know, it's just a lot of guessing. But now that they are where they are, I don't have as much of an issue of them not doing a long-term deal with Petrie on an overpay. I probably wouldn't be doing it if I were them either. But totally fair criticism as to whether or not they should have gotten him done well in advance of this. But Petrie at over $5 million, I think it's just not a good contract.
See, to me, it's not it's the process about going through it. And if you go back to 2013, right? They clearly Craig McTavish has never felt, and Jeff Petrie's numbers this year, Ryan, aren't so much better than last year, right? Like his offensive numbers are actually a little bit lower.
Yeah.
Right. But he's more consistent in a lot of areas of his game. People are probably focusing on more. And I think more people are like, well, geez, he's older now. He's a little bit more mature. Nothing in his game has changed that drastically in the actual evaluation process for pro scouts for their team should have looked and said, okay, here we have in our system. Who do we have who's better? Can we sign Jeff Petrie in the summer of 2013 when he has 1 year left in his deal to a 3 or 4 year extension at $3 million? Very likely at that point because he was only a $1.8 million cap hit, right? He had a year left of that deal. You're showing faith in the player that you're paying him advance now for a few years down the road. And if he doesn't pan out, you haven't sold yourself a bit because they went out and paid Ferentz 4 years, who was a way older player. Then they signed Nikita and Justin Schultz. So they valued all three of those guys. And that, to me, is what the issue is. Not Jeff Petrie, but they valued those three players higher than Jeff Petrie and clearly were wrong every time.
Well, and when they were looking at bringing in Nikita, somebody somewhere along the way probably said or should have said, how's this going to affect our ability to extend Petrie if we want to? Because, I mean, essentially, the money that they're going to pay Nikitin, that's Petrie's money, right? They didn't need to necessarily go do that. And then to pay him as much as they're paying him, and then they have this homegrown prospect or homegrown player that's sitting there, yeah, it definitely is a little bit rotten, for sure. At what point in the process do you look at it and say they should have, at this point, done a long-term deal with Petrie? You think there's a couple of spots along the way where maybe they could have. I mean, remember, they were going on a spending spree with all their young players, too, right? They were handing out $6 million to all these young guys with the idea that they were their core. Petrie's never been talked about as, you know, anything even close to a core player on this team in the context of Nugent Hopkins, Hall, and those sorts of guys. And it was almost like they have been cautious with everybody else and handed those guys the dollars. How does their ability to pay Jeff Petrie today change if Jordan Eberle's on a $4 million bridge contract or if Ryan Nugent Hopkins isn't making as much as he's making in year four, right? So they paid all these other guys and this extra money going to these guys, and I'm not saying they're bad deals. I mean, I think the Hall deal will be okay, but how does that affect how they look at Jeff Petrie and whether or not they can get him the money that he's going to want? And so they're paying certain guys, and other guys get left out in the cold a little bit, and Petrie's going to be one of them here.
Well, I don't think he gets left out in the cold. If anything, man, he's getting shipped out to sunny wherever. It's called playoff contention.
You know what I mean? Out in the cold in terms of the organization and where they're going to allocate their resources. I mean, Petrie at $4 million over 4 years for what he had shown up to this point, say at the start of this season, last summer, say, $4 million over four for Petrie. I mean, it would have been taken a little bit of a gulp if you were the Oilers based on what he'd accomplished to that point, because he doesn't put up numbers. Defensive defensemen or two-way defensemen who make over $4 million, it's kind of like it's never a great idea to spend more than $4 million bucks on a guy that doesn't produce offense. But it's being done in today's game. We're seeing it. You see it out in Washington, you see it. But McTavish has never viewed Petrie as the kind of player that he was willing to overpay. And we'll see how that stings them now. We'll see what their blue line looks like next year and what dollar figure they're forking out for it.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mention that, because so let's say last summer, the year before, 4 years of Jeff Petrie, even at $4 million, which I don't think they would have had to do in 2013. But even if last summer they did it, you say gulp. They gave Justin Schultz, Ryan, 1 year at 3.6, which we all know equates then to this year maybe at 3.6. And then if he even improves slightly, he gets a raise to $4 million. Right. And had he done anything at that point, that's my concern, is that I question their ability to evaluate defensemen based on 100%. Their actions. That's my concern.
Yeah, right with you on that. I think Craig McTavish has a track record of not doing a great job projecting defensemen. I think that's fair. I think that's the evidence is there. Right. And you go back to the start of last year and he's admitted it. Right. A couple of misses with guys that are washed out of the league, a few misses, the Petrie Norris Trophy thing. My question is he going to continue doing it? Is he about to do it with Oscar Klefbom? Is he about to do it with Darnell Nurse? Are they going to do it with other guys who show promise? Are they going to see the best in these guys and cross their fingers and hope and make decisions based on that? Because I'll tell you what, if I'm Craig McTavish, I'm thinking for Darnell Nurse to make the team next year, he needs to beat somebody else out on a one-way contract. He needs to earn his way onto that team next year, not just have a spot sitting there for him like he did with Draisaitl this year. That has to happen, and it needs to be a legitimate player. They need to look at their blue line core and say, if Nurse makes our team next year, we're probably not good enough on the blue line unless he surprises us, not bank on him being good enough and fitting in and handing it to him right from the start. Now, he said a few things the other day that lead me to believe the idea is to start Nurse, possibly Draisaitl in the American League, and have that happen. But we'll see. When the rubber hits the road, we'll see if he's committed to that path. Because the path that they're on now with all their prospects, it has to stop. It has to change. They can't just keep rolling guys in early. It's just, it's no good. It's gotten them nowhere.
Ryan Schaug from TSN joins us. Schauger, looking around the league, man, the Western playoff race gets more entertaining by the day. The San Jose Sharks become a very interesting one. We know they tried to deal Marlowe and Thornton in the summertime, and they said no thank you to the no movement clause. There's been some whispers from people I talked to that Thornton has maybe opened the door a crack to consider a deal. Do you think the Sharks can make a big enough splash at the deadline, or are they basically going to have to wait till the offseason to revamp that team?
Yeah, tough. And the problem is they're not in control of their own decisions. And any time you take control of your own decisions and give it to somebody else, what you want to do and what you can do become two completely different things, and they end up with their hands tied. So I don't know if they're going to be able to make a big enough splash. Honestly, they're one of those mystery teams because there's such bizarre circumstances around them where they have these players that they've made clear they didn't really want. Core players, critical players, good players, really. I mean, it's not like these guys are terrible. I mean, Phil Thornton's not, what has he got, 50-some points this year? I mean, he's having a decent year points-wise. Teams will want that guy. Absolutely they'll want that guy. But I don't know about them making the playoffs this year. I think it's going to be pretty tough for them. They've played more games than most of the other teams that are in and around that mix. You know, the Los Angeles Kings have two or three games in hand on them. I just don't know if the San Jose Sharks are going to be able to turn it and swing it in. I mean, they're not playing very well right now as it is. I would definitely have San Jose on the outside looking in come playoff time right now, wouldn't you?
Well, last week, yeah, I'd pick them and the Flames as the two teams that wouldn't make it. I just thought the Wild were just too hot. And actually, early on in the season, the Wild were playing way better than their record. Their goaltending was beyond terrible. So,
yeah.
It's tough for them, and you know what? Thornton and Marlowe really kind of control everything, and that's what makes it sure they'll say, okay, I might want to get traded, but I only want to get traded here or there, right?
Yeah, and that's tough, right? Because where are those guys going to want to go? And the places they want to go, do you think they're going to be able to afford them? Do you think that it's going to be a fit in any way, shape, or form at the dollar figures that they're at? And, I mean, I don't know what their list looks like, but I don't know, man. I can't imagine that there are too many teams. And the teams that would be on it, I just don't know how they make that work or make that fit. So I think those are off-season trades, kind of like almost like the Rick Nash situation and getting him out of Columbus was. It's a big, they're big trades that need to be made. And making big trades at this time of year, the teams that are interested in these players are all pretty tight to the cap, you'd think. So I don't know how it's a marriage. I just don't see how that gets done midstream.
Outside of Petrie, do you see any other moves from the Oilers?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think there'll be a deal for Ali. So that, and it's kind of peripheral stuff. I think Derek Roy is going to stay put, like I said last week. I don't think he's going anywhere. They'll make a decision on him in the offseason, as McTavish said the other day. Clint Cameron, they got done like I thought they would. I think Petrie is the main deal, and I think it'll be pretty quiet for the Oilers. I don't know what else they have right now that they're willing to part with based on what McTavish has said. And really not no critical pieces in their lineup. So I think he wants to return a bunch of guys next year and not have the same amount of turnover as he had from last year to this year. And I think it's going to be a quiet trade deadline for the Oilers. I think Petrie will get moved. I think it'll be for a warm body, maybe an American League guy or a guy in the CHL or college. I don't know that it'll necessarily just be for a second-round pick, though. I don't think that's the deal that they want to make.
Well, I know they don't want a pick. I've pretty much been told that. They'd prefer a prospect, of course.
Yes.
Right. Now, I should say that, a decent prospect, right? Not not another team's sixth-round pick from 2 years ago or anything like that. So.
No, yeah. I mean, it's got to be a decent prospect. But the issue with doing that is now you're asking teams for guys they know more about, right? So they have these guys rated within their organization. I mean, a pick is a pick. Well, how good your scouting staff is can determine whether it was a good pick or not, right? Well, these are actual warm bodies that are playing places. They have scouts' eyes on. They have them ranked within the organization. So, I mean, you use, like, the Tampa Bay Lightning, for example, right? You think, okay, if the asking price for Petrie is around a second-round pick, well, you look at what the Tampa Bay Lightning have in their system and what they've done in that second round over the last few years of the draft, and you go, okay, well, you know, they're not going to get Adam Ernie. I don't think that's happening. He's having a good year with the Quebec Ramparts. I've been told that Tampa is very, very high on him and that deal is not going to happen. He's got 75 points with Quebec already this year. He's 6'1", big left winger. So a deal like that's not going to happen. Well, what about they had two second-rounders last year. Dominic Mashin, he's a Czech player who's not having an overwhelming year. I don't know that the Oilers are interested in that. Jonathan McLeod is an interesting one to me. He's a big defenseman that plays at Boston University, but he was a late second-round pick. So what does it look like in the form of a warm body? Well, it's somebody that the organization knows, and they know if they're going to fit or not, and it's harder for them to give those up than just picks.
The defense situation now moving forward. Jeff Petrie, mm-hmm. Do you think he has to play one of these two games just so teams looking to acquire him know that he's healthy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that they were probably smart in resting him, because what you didn't want to have happen was play him too early and then he's hurt and he's got to sit out. Now, I think he's still tradable, even if he's a week on the, you know, if he's injured for a week. I think he's still tradable. But I think they were smart to let him sit. They'll get him into one or both of these next couple of games, show teams that he's good to go, and that makes a trade easier. So, yeah, I don't think he has to play to be traded, but I think it makes things a heck of a lot easier.
Well, yeah, I would think so. And whether it's tomorrow or maybe they wait and just give him an extra few days, because they don't play until Saturday again, right?
Yeah.
The Saturday game would seem like the obvious one, right? The Oilers, they've got a lot of time now. They play Tuesday, Saturday, and not until next Tuesday. So only two games between now and the deadline.
And if I were them, I'd keep Osterley in the lineup. I mean, if Petrie's not ready to go, I would find a way to keep Osterley in the lineup. I think he looked good the other night. He skated really, really well. I mean, he's a young defenseman, right? He's going to make mistakes and things like that. But his foot speed and his stride, the strength in it, I mean, he's immediately right there with both Petrie and Schultz in terms of skating ability, maybe even a little bit ahead. Just an unbelievable skater, and he was calm under fire. So if I were the Oilers, I'd be taking this opportunity to give him a few more games and look at him and give him a little bit of a taste towards the end of the year this year, so he knows what to expect for next year. And American League next year, and he looks like he could be a decent prospect.
Yeah, decent prospect, but he's not a guy who I hope they have penciled in the roster next season. Like, my goodness.
It's too early to be doing anything like that. No. But, I mean, when a guy steps in and plays that well in his first game, then he's earned himself another look. And I think it's incumbent on the organization to sort of go, okay, well, let's have this make sense. He played well. We should probably give him another look and let see what he can do. Because sometimes guys just get to the NHL level and they, for whatever reason, it clicks in for them and they, you know, you can get a stretch out of guys. And that's where you learn a lot about them. So I like the fact that he was in. I think they need to keep him in.
Sugar, as we get a week away from the deadline, will there be any surprise name dealt in your mind between now and next Monday?
Well, it's hard to say surprise because of what Toronto is doing, how they're trying to offload a lot of names and a lot of people. So that's the biggest possibility of big names. But again, it's kind of like trying to move Thornton or Marlowe, right? Some of those bigger names, they're tough deals to make because the guys make so much money. So, you know, surprise names, I don't know, man. I don't know that anything... The one situation I could see where... I think because the guy making the decisions can be a little volatile in his decision making because it's been rumored forever, and where there's smoke, there's fire. Maybe Ryan O'Reilly gets moved. Wouldn't that be interesting if that were the case?
Wow, interesting. He'd have a lot of suitors, I would think.
Oh man, tons of them, and rightfully so. If I were the Oilers, I would stand outside on Patrick Waugh's front lawn, waiting to find out what the ask is and how to make that work because he's precisely the type of player that the Oilers need down the middle. It's been a fit for a long, long time. For a few years now, he's exactly that guy that can score you some goals, but has a good two-way game. He's young enough. It's a great fit. It's just a matter of prying him out of there somehow.
Yeah, he's only 1 year away from UFA, though. You're going to trade that to come to Edmonton? If you're Ryan O'Reilly, you think there's any chance you would sign an extension on a team that's missed the playoffs 9 years in a row?
Yeah, well, if he considers himself part of the solution, you never know, and if you put enough money there.
Yeah. Oh, you'd overpay him?
As a second-line center, I'm probably more comfortable overpaying a second-line center than I am a third or fourth defenseman, a second-pairing defenseman. So, I mean, I don't know what his number looks like. I don't know what a long-term deal for him looks like. Or what it will by the time it comes around next year, but he's a good player. He can immediately step in and be a legitimate top six forward. So whether it's, you know, that $6 million range, well, that's what they're paying their other top six forwards.
Interesting. We'd have to get into a debate on this another time, not today, but you value a second-line center clearly ahead of a second-pairing defenseman. We'll discuss that later on. That's an interesting
one. Well, I think you can find second-pairing defensemen a lot easier than second-line centers.
All right. Okay, buddy, we'll chat tomorrow.
All right, man, see you.